Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/Martin Chronicle. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Hi, everybody. It's Michael Martin from Martin Chronicle and author of The Inner Voice of Trading. Today, my guest is Adam Grimes. He's the author of The Art and Science of Technical Analysis. It's a great book. How you doing, Adam?
Pretty well. How are you doing today?
If I was any better, I'd be twins. So, this is a big book for those of you that haven't seen it. It's been out a while. Adam and I have had a little technical difficulty on the scheduling side to get him on the show, so to speak. And I'm really grateful he's been able to take some time with me today. It's a big book. It's out on Wiley. The reason why I like it is because there is a great, obviously, a huge discussion on technical analysis, time frames, indicators, but it also talks about the spiritual side of it and the emotional side of it, which kind of evolves into the second half of the book. So my interest in the book got actually increased as I read the book because it kind of spoke more about what I do, a la the inner voice, via, you know, teaching technicals, which I think is a hard enough job. So good job with that, Adam. I think it's a clever way to look at technical analysis and what's out there, but also how it can relate to people specifically. Was that something that did you start with that idea in mind, or did that kind of evolve as you began writing the book?
Well, the idea, the book kind of went through three major stages. And my first plan was to write a book, and this seems absurd now that I stand at the end of the project, but I wanted to write a book that would take somebody from a stage of complete novice, because, you know, to me there's something very appealing about that student who comes without baggage, or that person who comes to the market without preconceptions and experiences that have created a lot of bad habits. So I wanted to write a book for that beginner that would take them from the stage of being a beginner to having a pretty complete grasp of everything that you now see in the book. And, you know, as I got into it, I realized I don't think that book can be written. I don't think that's one book. It's certainly not a book that I could write. And because, you know, you're trying to have the book do too many things. You're trying to have the book teach very basic things and then teach more advanced elements of analysis and then teach all this behavioral stuff that some of which has to be learned experientially. So when I realized I could not do that, then the second form of the book was the first version I sent to the publisher was actually more than 900 pages.
Woo-hoo!
Yes, exactly.
Holy cow!
Yeah. Well, it included everything you have here, and then it's funny, I just got a question on my blog, somebody asking if there was any back test to back up what I said in the book. And well, actually, there were about 400 pages of back test, because most of those 400 pages that we pulled out there were a couple chapters that talked about how to do statistical research and gave the reader the exact tools, and then gave the result of a ton of back tests looking at price tendencies and showing things that don't work and things that do work, and to kind of, you know, it laid a very well structured, almost academic argument and support for the book. And obviously, who's going to read a 900-page book? So I pulled all of the heavyweight statistical stuff out, and now what you have is a book that is really targeted to the practical trader, either to the developing trader or to the trader who is working, say, you know, even in an institutional setting. This could be a book that could be valuable for a portfolio manager who's making decisions. And as for the intuition, the inner voice, as you so eloquently say, yes, you know, at the end of the day, we are not black boxes. We're not computers making decisions. And there is some There's some magic that happens in that grid of probabilities, realm of possibilities, when human intuition understands on a deep level these probabilities that exist in the marketplace. And then what happens when you actually go to the market? What happens when you, the living, breathing person, the emotional person, what happens when you interact with other people in that competitive marketplace? You face risk, you face opportunity, and then all of the decisions that cascade from that. I realize that actually is as important a part of a trader's success as the technical analysis. And several of my readers, my early readers, suggested pulling out the behavioral stuff because the title of the book is The Art and Science of Technical Analysis, and there was some discussion, you know, is it really appropriate to talk about intuition? Is it really appropriate to talk about cognitive biases? Is it really important to talk about what the trader actually needs to do to apply this stuff? And I said, yes, otherwise it's worthless. Otherwise, I wrote a book that is of no value to anybody, because unless you have that intuition, unless you have the behavioral wisdom to interact effectively with the marketplace, you don't stand a chance.
Well, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I liken it to a carpenter. You know, there are hundreds of tools a carpenter can use, but just because they're available, it doesn't mean that he or she can take any combination of them and do good carpentry work. There has to be
right.
Something more to it, and that's the art part. You know, there has to be a vision.
Right.
Then to completely beat the living daylights out of the analogy, there is the saying that, you know, a carpenter measures twice and cuts once. In my style of trading, I tend to measure 4 or 5 times, maybe more, and cut once, you know, albeit with a little risk to get started. And then once I start making money, I mean, I really don't start building the position until I'm up, you know, 5% really. So it's a very different way. It might be very atypical for the folks listening. But I think there's a lot of emotional wisdom that goes when you think about literally measuring twice. You can see the sensibility of it from like a practical standpoint. But, you know, I'm not concerned necessarily with sensibility, because that oftentimes translates to what does it look like to other people. And I'm not, as you can imagine, not too concerned with what other people think about most anything. So there has to be a certain type of patience that you have and a certain type of, you know, emotional constitution where you can go through the process of kind of culturing the pearl and measuring twice, measuring 3 times, measuring 4 times, but then ultimately maturing emotionally to the point where you do make a decision, as opposed to, you know, ready, aim. You know, sooner or later you have to pull the trigger. And I think your book does a great job in your book does a great job of actually walking people through that. And I do want to get to that. There is one part at the very, very beginning of part 3. It's chapter 6. It's called The Failure Test. And when I first looked at that, I tried to read the book like a rookie. And I'm like, what do you mean failure test? Do you mean that some of this stuff doesn't work? And how important is it to realize that, you know, both traders and systems and securities have failures?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Some of the best trades, at least in my style of trading, are set up when the thing that everybody expects fails. When you have, and the trade that you talk about there, the failure test, of course, you know, this happens all of the time when a market pushes just far enough past a critical level to, and what they're doing is running stops, you know, so to see if anybody's going to buy, see if there's any liquidity there. Happens intraday, happens on monthly, yearly time frames. Markets will just kind of probe levels, and you can see when markets are stretched to extremes like that, I think it's very easy to get a read on, well, I mean, actually, nothing's very easy in the market, but comparatively easy to get a read on the conviction level of the other players in the market. And there again, you know, I mean, here we're back to talking about emotional wisdom and talking about understanding the intent and the conviction of other players, and you can do that. You can build that sense through understanding how prices move, through some combination of some basic understanding of the usual patterns of market behavior. But then I do think it takes a certain amount of, call it screen time, call it chart time, but really seeing markets develop and seeing these patterns unfold in real time. And yes, these failures of expected patterns, you know, the best trades, in my experience, have been the trades that are difficult to do because they look pretty stupid at the time. You're shorting silver here, really? You're buying Netflix here? What are you thinking? You're an idiot. And then, of course, weeks and months later, everybody's like, oh, yeah, that was a great trade. But at the time, you're putting on something that has just enough of a contrarian bent and looks just illogical enough to people who are doing casual analysis. Or, you know, frankly, a lot of what you hear in the media is very focused in one direction. So if you're doing the right thing in the market, you're going to find yourself on the right side of a lot of these failures, which means you're going to be on the wrong side of a lot of the narrative, and you're going to look pretty silly at the time, but give it a few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great segue. It takes time, you know. It really takes time to culture the pearl and to gestate your career. I think a lot of folks, you know, our brains as human beings are built to respond to opportunity. And so if you watch too much, follow social media too closely, or if you have the TV blaring all day, you can get exasperated into almost non-action because by the way they tout it, you'd think that opportunity is flying by and you're obviously a loser for not capturing all of it. But in my take, the fact is that there is opportunity, but most of it is suboptimal opportunity in terms of a risk-reward scenario. And they don't really talk about the failure aspect of their ideas. They don't talk about position sizing. They don't speak about when they're wrong, where do you get out. They just kind of talk their book and say, you know, I like Facebook at these levels, I like Netflix here, or I think gold is cheap, or, you know, given the, you know, the confluence of religion in the Middle East, I like crude oil here. But they don't say typically when they're wrong, when you should get out, and when you should position size. So, you know, with your book in mind, you talk about developing your edge. And I see that as being, you know, twofold. There's obviously part one of your book, which is the technical side. Then there's the second part, which is the emotional side. Talk to the folks listening about how important it is for a trader, a man or a woman, to have a definable edge coming into the marketplace when they're managing risk.
Well, you have to have both pieces. And this actually was one of the main reasons I wanted to write a book in the first place. You know, my trading career of nearly two decades has not been a straight line. You know, it's not like you learn to trade at one point and then you just sit back and watch the accounts grow. You know, I was always learning new skills, new products, new styles of trading. And in the process, as I was seeking out information, I did this in lots of different ways. You know, I went to mentors, I went to coaches, I went to educational providers. I got a formal education in finance and statistics, and so, you know, I kind of went all over the place. But one thing that really surprised me was that and at the same time, psychology is absolutely critical. There's also a large number of people who are simply teaching the public things that don't work. And then, I mean, imagine cynically. Let's say you wanted to package a ABC candlestick system that you know has no edge. And you sell it to people, and then you tell them, well, the reason you're failing is because you don't have the right mindset. The reason you're failing is because you're not approaching this psychologically correctly. And so then people work on that, and this is a very cynical view of part of the educational system, but you know, people focus on their psychological deficiencies without realizing that it's possible that what you're trying to do in the market just simply doesn't work. You have to have that statistical edge. It's like go to a casino and play, you know, pick your game, play roulette, and focus on psychology. Well, the wheel's going to come up wherever the wheel's going to come up, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I mean, and actually, you know, in that situation, bad money management's probably your best bet. Put it all in black, let the purse roll and see what happens. Statistically, it's the right way to play roulette. So, you know, on the other hand, and you know this because we've all seen this, you can tell somebody exactly what the right thing to do is, or even, and we've all been here, even more, I can know exactly what the right thing to do is in the market. And if I am not psychologically in the place where I can execute and where I can carry through and where I can do the right thing, having that knowledge of what the right thing to do is worthless. So it turns out for a, and you know, it may be different for, it is different for computers, for black boxes, for especially for very high frequency trading, for very long-term trend following systems that are completely rules-based, it's different. But when a human discretionary trader faces the market, your edge is composed both of doing things that are statistically, quantitatively correct in the market. You have to align yourself with the probabilities. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be on entry. Keep in mind, a tremendous amount of your edge can come from the decisions you make when you're in the trade, from trade management. It's possible that you have a trade management plan that has enough of an edge that you can make money with random entry. So it's not all in the entry, but you have to have some kind of statistical edge over the market, and then you have to have the psychological edge, the emotional edge, the wisdom, the experience, the fortitude to carry through and to do the right thing in the market. Without both of those, you don't stand a chance.
For you, the listeners of Martin Chronicle Podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. At audible.com, you can download for free most of the books that I've reviewed, such as Dark Pools by Scott Patterson of Wall Street Journal, The Indomitable Investor by Steve Sears at Barron's, Buy High, Sell Higher by Joe Terranova of CNBC, The Alpha Masters by Manit Ahuja of CNBC, and of course, Hedge Fund Market Wizards by legendary author Jack Schwager. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/Martin Chronicle. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Martin Chronicle for your free audiobook.
That's true. You could be banging your head against a wall, you know, trying something that, again, logically would make sense to you, but might not feel good. You could be trying to execute a system that, unknown to you, has negative expectation, like roulette. You can also, you know, get into trading methodologies that would make sense to other people who are caught up and locked into their intellectual or their logic mind and not, you know, don't have a clue about their emotional side of life. And that, to me, you know, speaks to, and again, I want to come back to the book with this, you know, there's this saying about, you know, you draw a pie chart of all of your knowledge, right? And a big part is, you know what you know. Then another sliver is, you know what you don't know. And then it's the other part, which is the unknown, is what you don't know, you don't know. And that really speaks to the concept of uncertainty. And uncertainty can mean a lot of things to a lot of folks. When you're dealing with statistics and probability, you know, it means one thing. And you can measure that. When you're dealing with it emotionally, it's really a whole different ball of wax, because that's where you can run the gamut on a scale of 1 to 10 about, you know, the power of your emotions that run. When the outcome of something is uncertain and you have to be patient waiting for it, that right there, unless you're capable of dealing with strong emotions running through your body, I would say don't put on a single solitary trade, because that's what trading is all about, living with a very uncertain future. In terms of when or why or how things would work out, and over a time frame where you also have to be, you know, patient. So with that in mind, let's talk about the importance of looking at things across multiple time frames. How can a person do that and use that to develop their edge, at least on the technical side?
Right. Well, I think this is a critical concept, and it's one that certainly people know about. You know, there are enough people writing and talking about multiple time frame analysis that it's out there. People are thinking about it. But I do think that it's oversimplified and in many applications. Like, you know, one of the common ways would be let's just define our time frames. Let's say you trade off of daily charts, and if you trade off of daily charts, then your higher time frame chart would typically and conveniently be a weekly chart, and then your lower time frame chart, because typically we would look at three time frames, your lower time frame chart might be an hourly chart or something like that. Personally, I'm a big fan of dividing the trading session for whatever instrument I'm looking at into five equal periods, and then using bars of that length. So you'll see, you know, like you'll see some 72-minute bars and things, and there's no, there's no magic ratio or magic number. It's just that you want five bars that equally portion the day time-wise. So, you know, the typical way that this might work is you might tell somebody, okay, wait until your weekly chart is uptrending, is trending up, and then only take long entries on the daily chart. Or, you know, wait until the weekly chart shows a clear downtrend, and then only take bearish entries on your daily chart. Now, the problem with that is, there's a couple problems. There's no magic trend indicator. You know, whatever definition of trend we use, whether it involves moving averages or some kind of retracement ratio or something like the Wells-Waller's parabolic, whatever trend more simple swing definition even, whatever definition you use, it's somewhat arbitrary and lags. And you will be able, whenever you're able to define a shift of trend, you'll be able to look back and say, oh, that actually happened many, many bars ago, and now I finally had the confirmation from my system. And in an idealized, perfect world, of course, your trading entries would come at the turns, would always anticipate whatever trend definition you're giving. Now, the other problem is that most of the tools that are out there, like people, and this is some of the stuff that was cut out of the book, so you're getting a little bit of extra freebie here, like people use a triple moving average trend crossover system. And, you know, basically you have three moving averages of different lengths and we're all on the same side, then you're trending either up or down. And they're the correct order, say it's shorter, intermediate, and long, in that order above each other, would be an uptrend. And what you find, and I tested hundreds of variations of this system, and they all, because of the lag, they all actually have, if you traded them on a purely mechanical basis, they all actually have a negative expectancy. So they're actually putting you on the wrong side of the market. So first of all, a lot of the people, when they do multiple time frames, are starting out with something that tilts the statistics against them a little bit. I find probably the best way to do this is two things. First of all, you can look and see when a pattern is playing out clearly on a higher time frame. Like you would have a consolidation pattern that is breaking down, and when you see that beginning of that breakdown and the momentum on the weekly chart, then you can look to enter your bearish entries in accordance with that breakdown on the higher time frame. Another thing is, you know, we were talking about the failure test, about those places where markets probe levels. And if you see that on a higher time frame, say I'm watching a market on the weekly time frame, has just tested above a previous pivot high and has failed down below, that sets the context. So I'm using that rather than I'm using the resolution of that pattern on the higher time frame to provide context and to filter my trades on the trading time frame. So that's really what I find. Rather than being a system that you can apply kind of mechanically, it does, you know, it's more of a bigger picture context. And there's a lot, you know, there's probably 100 pages of multiple time frame stuff in the book,
right?
Looking at specific trades, and you certainly, you know, you could spend months and months and months digging into this and still have a lot further to go. But that's it. The idea that the higher time frame provides context, and all we're doing, and this was a revelation to me. I've been trading for many, many years and had been much more successful than I was unsuccessful, but, you know, it's, as I said, it's never a straight line. And after I've been doing this for a long time, I realized, you know, all I'm doing here, I have no high conviction plays. All I'm doing here is flipping a coin, and it happens to be an unfair coin. It happens to be a coin that is weighted a little bit in my favor, and maybe it comes up heads 55% of the time. And so I'm betting on that weighted coin. I'm going to be wrong a lot. If you accept that definition of trading, it makes it very easy to be wrong. It makes it very easy to accept being wrong, because how can I be emotional when this weighted coin just happened to come up tails? It does that 45% of the time, so I don't have any emotional involvement with that. But once you realize that that's all you're doing is flipping that weighted coin, your indicators, your higher time frame analysis, the things that you can do, just nudge those probabilities a little bit more in your favor. Maybe they add 1.5%. Maybe they add 0.5% even is a significant edge. And so it's just a matter of taking that grid probabilities and possibilities and just tilting it a little bit more in your favor.
Okay, the next two questions really come and would be, I guess, applicable to what you have in the second half of the book. And the first one is, although there probably are a few positives, you know, maybe after 20 years of study, for the person who's trying to get into the business and focusing on one or, you know, who's been around for 1 or 2 years and has been doing studies, and like all of us, we're kind of still studying on certain levels.
Sure.
Talk about the dangers of just trying to focus on trading, like day trading the E-mini S&P 500, for example. What are some of the things that the rookie trader is going to come across that he or she might not be aware of getting into it? And discuss, if you think, any sense of myopia that might come along with trying to trade, like whatever it is, the E-mini S&P, or focusing on gold or Apple.
Well, I did that for, I day traded the S&Ps successfully for, I guess, about 3 years, 3.5 years. And I would go back and forth between the S&Ps and the bond futures. The 30 years were pretty liquid at that time. And so, you know, I've been there and I've done that. And I think you have to realize, first of all, day trading in general, whether you're day trading stocks or currencies or futures, first of all, ask yourself why you're day trading, because there's some good reasons to day trade and there's some bad reasons to day trade. And what I find talking to people is that many times people are day trading because they're undercapitalized. And the sad reality is that, you know, you are the chances of you making it in this business, if you want to start, open a $2,000 S&P E-mini account and day trade your way to $5 million. Is it possible? It's possible. Are your odds a lot better if you took those $2,000 and bought lottery tickets? Possibly, you could make that argument. So make sure you're not doing this because you're undercapitalized. You're not opening a $200 Forex account and you're planning to live off of your winnings from that. It's not going to happen. A top-notch professional trader couldn't do it. You certainly can't do it. You can't do it when you start. It's just not possible. Good reasons for day trading. You do see a lot of patterns, and if you imagine the trader who is trading daily charts, and how many patterns forming, how many patterns failing, succeeding, that trader sees in a year. You know, it's kind of limited because, yes, there are, let's say you're a stock trader and there are, what, roughly 8,000 tickers that trade, maybe 2,000, 1,500 of those are liquid enough you could potentially trade them. So you say, oh, wow, I have 1,500 stocks and I can look at several hundred of those a day and I'm going to see a lot of patterns. But what you're actually going to see are a lot of highly correlated patterns, and what you're going to see are a lot of patterns that are influenced by the market, because all of your patterns are going to fail and succeed together, because in general, that's a gross overgeneralization. So you are limited if you trade on the daily charts with how many patterns you can see, and you need to see patterns. You need to be exposed to patterns to learn. The day trader, of course, can see thousands and thousands of times more patterns in the course of a year just because you're exposed to more data. However, you're exposed to more data that is very noisy. Intraday patterns, do the same things work on all time frames? To some extent, yes. You know, the markets make sharp moves, then they pause and consolidate and make another move. That happens on every time frame from the tick time frame all the way up to yearly time frames. The markets probe beyond important levels and usually fail in reverse. Yes, again, intraday, tick time frame all the way to yearly happens. But the character of patterns on the intraday time frame, and I say this as somebody who has seen a lot of intraday patterns, is quite a bit different. There's a much higher degree of noise. And I haven't even touched on the emotional aspect. It does definitely make you a little bit myopic. And, you know, frankly, one thing you need to think about, if you could structure, you have to think about your life. You know, if you could structure a trading career and you could be sitting in front of the screen from 9:30 to 4 o'clock, and realistically it's more like 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock, and watching every tick and, you know, following your system, or you could structure a trading plan where you trade on the daily chart, where you check in on the market several times throughout the day, where you do most of your analysis overnight. Most traders, not all, but most traders are going to be much happier with their quality of life in the second setting, and they're going to make a lot more money. This is one thing that pulled me away from day trading initially. I realized that I would just get a lot more bang for my buck time-wise, and also emotional involvement-wise, by the way, when I was trading on higher time frames than on my 3-minute and 5-minute S&P charts. And, you know, the other thing is that there, particularly for the newer trader, it's a little bit ironic that a lot of new traders choose day trading as the avenue to learn. It is possible to day trade successfully. I'm not telling you it's impossible, but in some ways, I think it's the most difficult kind of trading. So you have picked an environment right off the bat in which you stand less chance of succeeding than you might in some others. It's highly emotionally charged. It requires all of your focus, all of your time, and it's just, you know, something I have serious reservations about. Because another thing to think about is, and you touched on this actually, the book doesn't go into this very much, but, you know, when you learn a new skill, when you develop a completely new way of looking at something, whether it's markets or whether it's music or sports or chess or whatever, what you're actually doing is reshaping your brain. You can Google neuroplasticity. There are a lot of kind of pop psychology books about it, but there are also a lot of very serious, there's a lot of very serious research and a lot of very serious writings out there about this. What you're actually doing is reshaping your brain. Your brain is growing new connections. Your brain is taking existing structures and preparing to use them in slightly different ways. And what we realize is the emotional state of the learner, when it's critical to making this happen. So if you're able to approach your learning with a, let's say, almost an attitude of play, with a almost childlike joy, and of course there's a difference between childish and childlike, but, you know, with an openness and a receptiveness that, and also an emotional balance, you will find that your brain is able to make these connections much, much faster than if you're under constant stress. And the stresses of day trading for nearly all new traders, it's not a positive experience. I realize that may be an unpopular message, because I know that a lot of new traders are really set on day trading. And by the way, I was too for many, many years of my career. It's something that you probably can learn to do successfully. You probably can shorten your learning curve. You probably can learn a lot better. You probably can develop much better habits. Because I've come to believe that we talk about the skills of trading. What's that mean? Well, it's a little bit nebulous because it includes a lot of things that you need to trade successfully. I've become convinced that one of the key skills of trading is understanding how much you should let a position flux against you, kind of managing give back. And, you know, we know, depending on the type of the trade, the market you're in, you know, you might let, you know, in commodities, you might let soybeans move against you in a way you would not let natural gas. In stocks, you might let BP move against you in a way that you would not let Apple move against you today. And also, you know, the type of trade, how long you've been in the trade. There, this idea of being able to sit back and watch the trade move against you, whether you're giving up profits or whether it's come back past your entry point. Sometimes you need to take action. Sometimes you need to deal with the trade. Sometimes you need to just take your hands off the wheel and say, let's give this a little. And I find that that frame of mind is not so easy to find day trading. And I think day trading and its myopicness also encourages a kind of hyperactive trade management where you're focusing on every tick, you're feeling like you need to respond, you're feeling like you need to make a decision on every tick, and that's not healthy.
Well, look, buddy, this is a great book. I'm speaking with Adam Grimes. The book is The Art and Science of Technical Analysis. It's out now on Wiley. It's a big hardcover. This is a reference book as far as I can see. So, yes, you can get the thing on Kindle. But my advice to you is that if you're always trying to figure out now in the age of e-books which to buy e-book and which to buy hardcover, I would say my book is more e-book. And this book is, because of the graphs and the charts and what have you, is a great reference book to have very handy on your desk to look at and to read and to reread.